from inside the WAER studios.
Long outlet pass, Ryan Simmons inside! He scores the game winner! Give the assist to Don Mandata! Syracuse wins!
Finds Guerrier, open, drives baseline, goes up, and hammers it home! Quincy Guerrier, hello!
And it's intercepted! Andre Sisco!
Flings it from 75 feet past the scoreboard, and he connected! Elijah Hughes throws up a prayer at the buzzer, and somehow it's answered!
It's the Ostrom Avenue Podcast.
The Orange, take the Camping World Bowl.
Syracuse gets the program signature win it always needed. Perhaps the biggest upset in program history.
Taj Harris passed the 45. He's past midfield. 30, 25, 20, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown, Syracuse.
And one, Joe Girard.
Three ball, Buddy Boeheim. He got all three of them. Huge shot from Buddy.
Pass point, Black got it. Game winner. Brendan Curry with the winner.
Hughes left wing charges and slams with the right hand.
Killing a three at the buzzer. Oh, it's good.
And here's your hosts, Owen Valentine and Ben Shulman.
The season comes to a close, but oh boy, it seems like the season is just coming to fruition. Welcome into the Ostrom Avenue Podcast. Owen Valentine, Ben Shulman, Johnny Gadamowitz. We have a lot of stuff to get to today. We've got to talk the end of the season. We've got to give our quick praise for the postseason run. And then we've got to dive into the offseason, which could be just as stressful, just as chaotic, and just as, I'm going to go Spanish here and say loco, as the regular season was, because the transfer portal is already packed with more players than it's ever had in a single offseason. This is going to be the offseason for the ages. But before we dive into that, we've got to start. Syracuse, I think, blew everyone's expectations once again down the stretch here. Remember that Georgia Tech loss, that Duke loss. What is this team doing? They figure it out. They make a wonderful run. And you've got to give this team the praise for everything they've done, because, you know, it was a team that easily could have folded over. It was a situation that everyone sort of could have realized what was going on and not given as much, not worked as hard, sort of, you know, gave up on the year. And they did not. They worked. They fought. They picked up two big wins against San Diego State, West Virginia. And they played a solid defensive game against Houston, but not as much on the offensive side. This was a team that I think there's a lot to be proud about. So before we get into anything negative and the guys we are now having to say goodbye to, I think it is only fitting that we start this episode off with a bit of praise.
Deserved praise. I mean, big run for Syracuse. You mentioned the Georgia Tech game on February 27th, the day that Syracuse loses to Georgia Tech. I was pretty sure before then, but I'm like very sure at that point that SU is not making the tournament. At that point, it didn't seem likely. I don't think the NC State win was a quad one at that point. It had slid in earlier, then slid back out. And, you know, it just looked like SU was done. 2 weeks later on February is a 28 day month. 12 days later, Syracuse loses to Virginia by three, and I feel pretty confident that at that point the Orange are going to the tournament. So, you know, a crazy late run, and a lot more fun came once they got to the NCAA tournament. I don't think anyone is too angry or sad or disappointed in this team for bowing out to a two seed in the Sweet 16. That's pretty much all you can ask from a team that's a number 11. And, you know, this whole business is about entertainment, sports, and, it, you know, Syracuse gets an A+ in entertainment, as they often do, because it was a pretty crazy year. They really made you feel like they were done for and then came back and ended up with a solid finish. I know we're going to get negative later. The only drawback I have, if we're talking the whole season together, is, you know, it's again another campaign where, like, getting to the tournament was a big accomplishment for SU. And as we'll again discuss later with guys leaving, that could be the case next year. But, you know, I don't think Jim Boeheim strives to run a program where his team's consistently qualifying as an 11 or 10. I mean, at the bare minimum, I think SU should be trying to get 6-7 seeds. So, you know, the regular season as a whole, I don't think should be looked back on with a lot of fond memories, but the end and then the postseason run was definitely a huge positive note for SU to end the year on.
Yeah, and you guys mentioned, you know, that, look, people were writing off this team after the Georgia Tech loss, after the Duke loss. How about earlier in the year? I mean, you go all the way back to December, early December, that 10-point loss to Rutgers when, you know, people started to write off the Orange back then. You want to talk about only a 6-point win over a pretty bad Northeastern team, obviously the Pitt loss in early January, in which I believe Pitt didn't even have Justin Champagne in that game. So you don't have to go just to the middle of February to see where there were areas where people were ready to say that this Cuse team was not tournament built. And sure enough, come Selection Sunday, they do what they always do and they find a way to squeak it in. And you have to applaud them for making the most of it. Two exciting wins in the first weekend. And then, as you mentioned, Ben, you really just run into a tough Houston team that held them to just 46 points, a tough day at the office offensively for the Orange, in which their leading scorer, Buddy Boeheim, goes just 1-for-9 from downtown, held to 12 points on the afternoon. That's or the night, rather, excuse me. That's no formula for winning. But I think you do have to applaud the scrappiness of this team. It wasn't always pretty. It wasn't always fine-tuned basketball. But down the stretch, especially, you know, you want to think back to that ACC tournament when they hung with Virginia. Yeah, there are some negatives to take away from this year, and you can for sure apply those negatives moving forward. But I think there's also some positives to take away. And when you go on a run to the Sweet 16, I'd like to think that 10 years down the line, when I think back to 2020, 2021 Syracuse men's basketball, I'll remember more of the goods than the bads, and rather more of the ups than the downs. And I think this is an exciting team that, you know, left it all out there and really, really showed us what they got when push came to shove.
This is, I mean, a Sweet 16 team. When it's all said and done, and whether they deserve to be in the tournament is one thing, whether they deserve to not be in the latter, the first four is another thing, but they won when it was time to win. And that's what you say. This is a year, to use just the overused metaphor, it really was a roller coaster. You go preseason, Boeheim gets COVID as close to the season as possible without having to cancel the season opener. Buddy has to sit out early on. The whole team has to sit out. There were so many ups and downs, as you were saying. And at the end of it all, I mean, they made the Sweet 16. And I think as a fan base, as a, you know, in the Syracuse community in Central New York, I think when it's all said and done, you will take all the crap you had to put up with in the regular season to see that postseason success. Because I said it in the postgame show right after the game, and it's oversimplified, it's dumbed down. But I think because of the recent tournament success out of Syracuse, we don't realize what it truly means. Syracuse is one of the best 16 teams in the country in terms of this tournament. And I know Ben's going to shake his head. Those of you on YouTube know Ben is shaking his head. I'll narrate for those of you on the podcast. Johnny's shaking his head as well. I don't care whether or not you think they're a top 16 team in the country, but year in and year out, Syracuse is making that run. And this is a year that Syracuse was never really on the fringe of the top 25. Maybe early on pre-Rutgers or when they were 6-1, you could have thought, hey, you know, another win or two when they're in that conversation. It's a team that was never really in a ranked conversation, and they made it, and they beat ranked teams on the way through. They beat teams that were ranked throughout the whole season. They beat a San Diego State team that was number one pretty much all of last year. They beat good teams, they beat ranked teams, and they put themselves into that conversation down the stretch, which is all you can ask for, in my opinion. And I know there were moments this season that sucked and that were terrible to watch. I know you circle the Pittsburgh loss. You lose by 20 to Pitt, and this season's over. This team is garbage. You don't have anything to offer. Just do what you can to mentally prep for next year. They figured it out. They figured it out at the right time. And I'll tell you what, I'll take a team that figures it out in March, because that is all you really need. You'll put up with everything you need to put up with during the regular season to see his team compete like Syracuse does in the ACC tournament for a little bit this year, not as much in years past, but to see them compete how they do in the NCAA tournament is something that is truly magical. Ben, I know you're mad at me for making that take. And I will say I am in 100% agreement with you that you can't be happy as an 11 seed in the tournament and you want to be higher. But I think given everything this year, I am pleased with that outcome for Syracuse. Moving forward, we're on the same page. Figure it out. The double-digit seed team is fun, but that is by no means where you want to be come postseason.
Yeah, I think it's just about like what are the goals of the program? And maybe I'm being unrealistic, but is the goal of this program still to try and win national titles? And if it is, then this is not even close to good enough. They are a good tournament team. They make nice runs. Not this team, not the 2017-18 team, like, and obviously not the team that lost to Baylor. You know, none of them at any point really felt like they were doing anything other than, you know, granted this team blew out San Diego State, but like getting by where they could. Like, you know, even when Syracuse makes it to Houston, even in the worst region in the tournament by far, where the other matchup is going to be Loyola, Oregon State. You know, I never felt that Syracuse was going to go beat Baylor or Gonzaga or, and you know, once you get to the Final Four, you know, I think the rebuttal would be anyone can beat anyone, but that's a huge ask anyway. I just think it's a success in the fact that once, you know, they were where they were, which is on the fringe late in the year, get into the tournament, do it as a low seed. It's a huge success, the NCAA tournament this year, but it's, now I think it's about, okay, you've done this a few times. Get back to having legitimate regular season success and set yourself up where you're not just a team that shocks teams who haven't seen the zone. You're a good basketball team who's going to compound that with the fact that you shock teams. And then, you know, you can really start to compete with those upper echelon teams in the tournament. So, you know, I think everyone around this area has reason to be happy, and I'm not trying to stop that. And I do agree with Johnny that we'll probably look back on the year as a positive, because the postseason is what we're going to remember most out of almost every single year. But don't let, you know, 11 seeds that make two game runs fool you into think this program is hitting its goals, unless Jim Boeheim's goals have considerably changed in the last 5-6 years.
I think there's also something to be said for the fact that, like, look, this is a team that maybe never really found their stride until tournament time. And as much as you don't want to pull the COVID card, you know, you look back at the regular season and there was that stretch from December 19th to January 6th where they didn't play a game. Of course, both Louisville games postponed and ACC play. So not to say that they didn't have time to figure it out and mesh and gel, but you want to talk about teams really hitting their stride. And I think it's no secret that for the Syracuse team, that didn't happen until maybe, you know, the last 2-3 games of the regular season with North Carolina, Clemson, and then, of course, moving into postseason play. But, Ben, it's an interesting point you bring up where, you know, this isn't the first time. I think this is, what, the third time in the last 5 or 6 years that Syracuse has gone to the Sweet 16 as a double-digit seed. So it's proven to be sustainable if you're looking at a recent stretch, obviously. But big picture, you're 100% right. If Jim Boeheim wants to compete for national championships, they can't just hope to sneak in and have a couple things fall their way come Selection Sunday and then, you know, bank on the fact that the 2-3 is going to scare some teams and they'll sneak their way to a couple upset wins. There has to be a little bit more consistency earlier in that regular season. And I think this year we just never really saw that. Some of it to no fault of their own, because in a year like 2020 with all the protocols and less practice time and cancellations here and there and what have you, still that's no excuse. They need to do a better job, you know, working those kinks out a little bit earlier in the season so that by the time you're taking on a top borderline top five team in the country in Houston, you can play to your strengths and you can really run with them, because it's no secret that they were just overmatched this past weekend.
The last 11 tournaments Syracuse has made the Sweet 16 or better in six. And I know that for a lot of programs, that is enough. Two Final Fours in that span should be enough. But it's a fan base hungry for more. It's a fan base that wants a team that's not a shock to make the Final Four. It's a fan base that wants a team that's disappointed that you only got to the Final Four. It's a fan base just hungry to get back to, you know, that late 2000s, early 2010s sort of mantra of Syracuse basketball, where you're a top 10 team. You're looking to, you know, be that number one team in the country. You get to that threshold every season or so. That is the level of basketball Syracuse fans want to get to. And you know what? It's the level of basketball that after this much time, I think they can close in on relatively soon. But we beat around the bush. We've got to get to it now. There are some obstacles in the way in what Jim Boeheim has said time and time again this season is going to be a chaotic, very chaotic offseason. He told Brent Axe on his show yesterday to strap in, buckle your seatbelts, because it's going to be crazy. Boeheim said 4 to 6 guys will be leaving this team due to transfers, and we've got some of that info already. We've got 3 guys to talk about so far, and then Quincy testing the NBA waters we'll get into to probably close out the episode. John Bull, John B., our boy, Robert Braswell, Bobby Braz, Earl Braz, whatever you want to call him, and Kadari Richmond, the 3 guys in the transfer portal already for Syracuse. And I think we've got to start with Kadari. And there's a quote from The Athletic that I feel like we just sort of have to address right off the top here. I just felt like I wanted to go somewhere I could play without restrictions and have a chance to showcase my game, not having to think about certain things out there on the basketball court. More freedom. I learned a lot here. One thing I can show people now is that I actually have the ability to shoot the basketball. That one hurts. Kadari was the guy I circled as the, there are a lot of people that can transfer. There are a lot of people that I think have, you know, thoughts of transferring, could be in the conversation to transfer. Kadari was the one name you circled saying, this is the guy you can't lose to the transfer portal, as you sort of search and look through the list of Syracuse players you think might have to make that decision.
It's a huge blow. I mean, you could make the argument, I don't think I will, but that there isn't another guy on this roster, and I'm not holding anyone back, that hurts the future of the program more by leaving.
Top 100 recruit. He's the only top 100 recruit.
And, you know, I think pretty widely seen as potentially underrated, even though he was on the top 100, showed great flashes at times, was one of the best defensive players in the conference. It's pretty brutal, and at the same time, it's understandable. I mean, we're going to get into all 3 guys. I understand the viewpoints of all of them. Kadari, not only, you know, the big focus from everyone is he didn't start over Joe, and that's, I don't know, but I would imagine that probably had something to do with it. But when he was out there, he was giving the ball up to Buddy and Joe constantly. Like, Kadari wasn't trusted to take his own shot, and I'm not there in practice, so I don't know if he should have been. From what I saw in games, I didn't think he was much of a shoot off the dribble guy, but I mean, he thinks he is, clearly, and he thinks at least he can be more of a focal point, probably wants more minutes, and some of the rumored places that have floated around, you know, unconfirmed reports on Twitter are programs that I would put up there with Syracuse in terms of equal quality. I mean, I even saw one person suggest West Virginia, who the Orange just knocked off, but obviously had a stronger regular season than SU. So, you know, for Kadari, if he gets to go to a place that's as competitive, if not more competitive than SU, and gets to be a bigger focal point in the offense, it's hard to argue. For Syracuse, it's a massive loss, though, because he's not replaceable, I think, really on either end of the floor in the immediate future, unless some transfer comes in, which, you know, we'll get into transfers in, I think, later in the episode.
Yeah, and you got a feel for Kadari, too, because, you know, he started, what, 3 games all season, and it was when Buddy Boeheim was sidelined with COVID-19. So he didn't really receive a lion's share of the minutes at any point, even during those games when Buddy was sidelined. Yeah, maybe Kadari started, but didn't chew up a crazy amount of minutes. And it kind of takes on the approach of, oh, what was it all for, right? It was really, I guess, to get Joe Girard on the court and for him to take those strides developing, but we didn't really see that too much out of JG3 this year. Now, granted, he figured it out towards the end of the year and poured it on when it mattered most, but at the end of the day, it's frustrating because it's hard to come to terms with that not being the motivating factor behind Richmond wanting to take off. And it's tough because it's an orange team that, you know, you can't point to a ton of guys from a defensive standpoint and say, okay, this guy's a stud. He fits what we do at the defensive end of the floor. Yeah, you could do it for Dolezal. But Richmond was really the guy who his defense was his bread and butter. I think that's no secret. Only averaged around 6 points per game. I think he had something like 3 assists per game. So, you know, those numbers aren't jumping off the page by any stretch, but he was towards the top of the ACC in steals. I think there was a decent chunk of the year where he even led the conference in steals per game. I don't believe he finished it at the top, but spent a decent amount of time at the top. It's tough to replace. And I don't want to say he's irreplaceable because there are guys out there that have similar game to him. But I'll tell you, if he can develop that offensive game in the way that he thinks he can, because clearly he's giving himself a vote of confidence, then he's going to make another coach very happy. Because I think the three of us know it's no secret that this is a guy that can ball and his ceiling is only going to get higher as time goes on.
The early list from what I saw pretty much immediately after that news broke, our friend of the podcast, recurring guest, Anthony DeBundo, said Florida State and Kentucky. And then Kyle Tucker said, not so much Kentucky, but Iowa State, West Virginia, Seton Hall, UConn, Creighton, Maryland, and George Washington have called. And I'm sure there are going to be a lot of teams additionally getting their name on that list. The worst thing about this for me is I think it's going to be watching Kadari do what we all knew Kadari could do in the future, a year down the road, 2 years down the road in a different uniform. And, you know, to see ACC schools on that list, to know that he can transfer within the ACC and play Syracuse 2-3, depending on a crazy season, possibly 4 times in a single year, it's going to be tough. And it'll be something that is brutal to see, because this is the guy that, you know, early season, immediate NBA scouts saying that this is a guy to keep an eye on. This is the player to keep an eye on. And because of, you know, I'm not entirely blaming Jim, because I think I agree with his point that you need all three to play and the starter is not that relevant. He came into a spot where, unfortunately, you've got two returning starters and a lineup that is not all too common to see change in. And those minutes weren't there for him early on. And he should have played more. There are a lot of guys that have said publicly he should have played more, and I'm sure he thinks he should have played more. He knows he should have played more. But he is going to do that somewhere else now, which is going to be tough to see the sort of talent that had to walk away, because it's a brutal blow for the Orange because of, you know, the upside potential you saw out of him. He is getting, you know, Jim Boeheim said Johnny Flynn comparisons. A lot of people defensively were saying Michael Carter Williams defensively, in terms of his comparisons. He had such a high ceiling, and to have seen him develop this offseason and come back next year. And I thought that decision was going to be made and he would be able to jump Joe and get the starting role. But I heard a lot of rumblings today that this was not a late season decision, and that this decision out of Kadari was made a little bit ago, and was something that was from a little bit earlier in the season. So this is the hardest one to sort of get through and wrap my mind around, because we all know the player that Kadari can be and the player that in theory he will be. And to see that come to fruition, not in Central New York, it's a brutal one for Syracuse, and something that I think Johnny said really well is not something you can't come back from, but it's something that's going to be tough to recover from for sure.
Yeah, do we want to do more Kadari, or do you want to get on to the other guys?
Yeah, let's move on. I don't want to think about it for a little bit. Ben, I mean, tip the cap to you for that tweet over at Ostrom Avenue Pod. It was the quote tweet was it perfectly captured the moment there, and it got me in my moment as well, because it was the one guy that I was just like, please no, you know, you need to keep him, you have to. But we move on to lesser guys, but maybe at the same time, Ben, I am not sure that we're ready to say goodbye to John B.
No, as a person, you know, as a guy dancing around in the SU hype videos.
The face of our tournament graphic.
Yes, the face of a lot of our Outer Banks inspired graphics, which is not a show I watch, but Owen does. John Bolajak was a pod favorite for sure. Real team implications, with no offense meant here to John Bolajak, pretty much none. Frank Anselm was likely to jump him next year anyway. I mean, for Anselm, after Anselm had his like undisclosed absence from the team for a while, he didn't really play much, but I would be hard pressed to think that Bolajak was really going to be a legit backup center last year with a lot of minutes. So, you know, his loss, meh, in terms of X's and O's. Braswell's, I think, a little more impactful. You know, I'm interested to hear what you guys think. I don't think that this crumbles the team. I think a lot of people liked the play that Braswell had near the end of the season, and that will influence some stuff. But at the end of the day, you know, he's a strict three-point shooter who shot below 30% from three. He did play good defense, but I don't think he was like a generational talent at D, and he scored in double digits three times all year. So, I mean, I'll hand it off to you, Johnny, but I'm not incredibly worried for the Orange to try and replace Bobby Braswell.
Yeah, I don't think...
Oh, Johnny, can I cut you for 1 second?
Of course, go for it.
Is it just me, or am I the only one that didn't realize that John Bull only scored 2 points this season?
In his whole SU career, he only scored two points. He redshirted last year, yeah. He played early.
Four career rebounds as well.
51 minutes.
2 points. A hard fought two. Was that Niagara? Was that the Niagara game?
I think so. I'll pull it up quick. It was, no, it was not.
Ryder?
It was Ryder.
He has two assists to his name.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Yeah. Niagara was his first game of the season. I was calling that game. He came in and committed three fouls like right away. Just an immediate three fouls for a career high three fouls at Syracuse. But Johnny, Bobby Braswell.
So, in the case of Braswell, I wouldn't say it worries me. I do think, I mean, because this is a guy who ate up some serious minutes down the stretch. I mean, you talk about ACC tournament, March Madness. He was seeing upwards of 20 minutes a game. I think he checks in at right around 23. For me now, where this pushes the area of focus, though, is really trying to bring back Marek Dolezal. And obviously that's something that is up for debate and pretty unclear at the moment. But just having that guy who can sort of stretch the floor, and obviously Marek is not nearly the shooter that Bobby Braswell was, but just having that sort of, you know, guy who presents some size, who can space out the floor, who you can slide in at that power forward spot, because we don't know what's going to happen with Barama Sidibe. That's another one that is up for discussion. So you're talking about an SU team that could lack some serious size. And not to say that Braswell was the biggest guy in the world, but just guys that you can sort of slide in there in the bottom of the zone that can hold their own. And for Braswell in particular, it's frustrating as well, because it did seem like he really was starting to hit his stride. It seemed like he was a guy that took the regular season to sort of figure it out, didn't really receive a ton of minutes either, but then down the stretch really received a vote of confidence from Jim Boeheim and answered the call pretty well. You know, he wasn't a scoring machine by any stretch, but he had some big shots, and he gave you minutes off the bench, which we all know how valuable those are in March. So he'll be missed again. Obviously, his impact more than that of John Bowles, maybe not quite as big as the loss of Kadari Richmond, but the domino effect of this in terms of how it's going to impact either of Dolezal or Sidibe and how hard, you know, SU really tries to retain them. I think that will be interesting to see for sure.
More so than that, I think it's, you know, Syracuse getting their own fill in the transfer portal too. I mean, you look, there's, I believe it's like 1,100 guys already in the transfer portal. This is, it's not a conversation that's exclusively being had by Syracuse fans, by the Syracuse community right now. This is a nationwide thing. It's like 3+ players per team on average in the transfer portal already. And I mean, we've still got basketball going on right now. So this season is not even over. Jim Boeheim said it perfectly. It's going to be chaos. It is going to be one of the busiest and most eventful off seasons in possibly the history of college basketball in terms of the transfers. But I think there's one thing with Robert Braswell that I really want to sort of get at. And, you know, mid season, early season, yeah, I was like, for sure, he's getting out of here. He's going to transfer. It's a guy who tested the waters last year and came back. And that's something you can note as well, is just because they enter the transfer portal does not necessarily mean they're going to leave. And with this many guys in the portal, you know, you don't know how sought after everyone is going to be immediately. So it's going to be, in theory, a lengthy process, a longer process throughout the offseason. But down the stretch, I thought, because of the sort of role that Braswell was able to develop for himself, that he was going to be a guy that would stay. But I think he sort of saw the future again. And as a guy who has, you know, played sparse minutes and come off the bench for so long already, to see Benny Williams coming in, see a guy that has the talent and the capabilities to be a day one starter at the same position as him, is something that's going to deter him. And I think, for me personally, I think if Alan Griffin stays, it is a great move for Braswell to transfer and go somewhere that he's going to get more minutes and be able to play a lot more. But if AG leaves, which is something that is also not off the books at all and something that I definitely want to go around and sort of see where everyone stands on, if AG leaves, I think it's a bad decision for Braswell, because I think his minutes are there going up and playing with Benny Williams and sort of chopping those minutes or being a part of a forward rotation with him and Guerrier, if that's sort of the situation. But I sort of want to go around here. We'll do a little prediction time. Jim said 4 to 6 guys. My big question is, does Quincy count technically? Does Quincy not count? I don't know where that stands, but we've got 3 names so far. Who do you guys think sort of jumps on that list? I've got a couple in mind. I'll send it to you guys first and just sort of see if we're on the same page or where everyone falls right now.
Yeah. So I'm a little confused too. I didn't hear the quote directly, but I've seen it on Twitter. So I don't know, with guys leaving, you know, if he's counting Quincy, if he's counting Barama and Marek, who I will not really speculate on, honestly, just because that's like personal life decisions that I don't know enough about to speculate. I happen to think AG is staying. I don't think Bobby Braswell transfers if he's, you know, fighting a freshman potentially, like a freshman only for minutes next year. That's a favorable spot to be in on a Jim Boeheim led team. The odds that, you know, you get beat out in zone play by Benny Williams early on are low. Now, Benny's a heck of an offensive player, and he did tell us when he interviewed with us that they do actually play the 2-3 zone at his high school, but still it's Boeheim zone. You know, 4 to 6, so 1 to 3 more guys. You know, Woody Newton's name has been dangling around forever. Wouldn't be surprised if he left, got a little run early, and then clearly got shuffled back. He, like Braswell, is watching a freshman come in at his position. Outside of that, you know, I still think Jesse's a possibility. What Jesse does, I think, could lend itself to telling us a little bit about what Barama and Marek are doing. You know, if Jesse's going to be the starting center at Syracuse next year, I would be surprised if he wanted to leave. Then again, transfers coming in too, which we'll hit on later. So who knows with that? Frank Anselm tweeted something cryptic, but then kind of pulled back on it. So I think he's probably here to stay. Joe's officially back, according to multiple reports. You know, I think it's really Jesse and Woody that I see as potential candidates. There's just not that many other players, you know, like Chaz Owens transferring, who knows? Those are the only two guys I really see. I know Alan Griffin for some people is a factor. I just happen to think that Braswell probably likely knows what Alan Griffin is doing, because I would assume they're friends. I've never played Division I college basketball, but I assume people have decent relationships. And I think that Braswell has to base some of his decision on the minutes he's going to play, and that's largely focused on Alan Griffin. So I have Woody and then maybe Jesse, and that's kind of all dependent on Marek Barama and transfers.
Yeah, talking about Alan Griffin, I can't imagine many teams are really that high on him. Like, he's a guy that brings some interesting skills to the table, and obviously coming from Illinois and then transferring to Syracuse, the track record is there of big programs taking a chance on him. But Alan Griffin had a pretty tough year. I think it's no secret. Now, maybe some teams are willing to overlook that because of how crowded that SU backcourt proved to be with the likes of Joe, Buddy, and Kadari. I think he probably stays, though. I think there's he looks to expand his role next year. Woody Newton's probably the guy that comes to mind if you're looking for a fourth to top off there. After that, maybe Anselm. I don't think Jesse leaves. I think Jesse has really proven, I think in the Houston game too, especially. I wish Jesse saw the court more in that Houston game, because it was clear to me that when he was out there, they were just playing that much better as a unit. I'm not sure what the plus minus breakdown would be, but when you come out of halftime and Jesse Edwards is not on the court to start the second half, I was stunned. So I don't think Jesse leaves. Owen, you're asking for names. I think Woody Newton's probably the fourth guy there that makes the most sense.
I'm on the same page with both of you in terms of Woody is my guy that I think gets us to the four. And I think for Syracuse's sake, you hope it's the four. I want to address a point that, WAER alum Tyler Rocky made yesterday. Alan Griffin is a guy that is very professionally focused, wants to go pro, wants to play basketball for as long as he can. And he brought up the point that maybe, you know, he leaves not to go somewhere else, but to just try and play professionally somewhere and test NBA waters, see if he can gain any more info on that, and possibly go play overseas, depending on, you know, sort of his mentality on the situation, what he sees. And I don't know, you know, if it's the most likely thing in the world, but I think it's definitely something that I think is feasible, and something that with a guy like him and a guy who is so focused, and, you know, so many guys at this level want to get to that next level. And he has been, you know, he's worked with so many big names, obviously dad helping him out with a lot of this information, a lot of these conversations, I'm sure. But it's a conversation that could be had. I don't know. Alan Griffin is my guy that I'm up in the air about. I would not be shocked to see him try and go somewhere else. I would not be shocked to see him stay. I would not be shocked to see him try and test professional waters and go play somewhere else. He is my wild card right now. I could see him sort of fall anywhere at this point in time, but I think all three of us seem mentally on the same page with Woody Newton being the guy to go to get you to that four-person threshold, and then possibly one of the bigs could follow suit. I hope it's not one of the bigs, because I think they've got a good little duo there. I think Jesse showed a lot down the stretch. And I think that on top of that, you know, Frank Anselm is a guy that has a lot of upward potential still, and is a very young guy, and a guy that, you know, he could still be in high school at this point, like did not have to be here this year and made his way to Syracuse. So both of these guys with upcoming, a lot of potential. And Ben's given me the message right now that we're getting late on the episode here. So I'm going to go executive decision, and we're not going to talk about who Syracuse might bring in that will be a future episode once we can, you know, see the waters a little bit more, see where everyone stands, and see if there's a couple of names that we can sort of circle. But one thing, we'll do a quick roundabout and then wrap up the episode. Just the quick thoughts on Quincy testing out the NBA waters before we go here.
Smart individual decision. I expect Allen to do it too, because after the rule change in 2019, you can hire a certified agent, meet with teams, compete in the combine, and then come back to school. So there's really no downside for Guerrier. I think he goes, you know, if by chance an NBA team says, yeah, we're interested in drafting you, you know, earlier in the season, I would have said, I don't know if he settles for a second round, like a late second round pick. I think now he probably does. But if a team says, you know, we're interested in drafting you, then he's going to go make his money. And as a Syracuse fan, you should be bittersweet happy for him, because he's a Syracuse player advancing. But I think in all likelihood, he goes and kind of like Tyus did after the 17-18 Sweet 16 run, he comes back with a list of things that NBA scouts want him to do, and he attempts to do that and tries to get drafted as a junior. So, you know, I would be shocked personally if an NBA team took a chance on him, partially just because it's so much is about how you end the year. Like, he was great at the beginning of the year, and he was just like okay at the end of the year. And I don't think that that rubs teams the right way in terms of drafting someone. And most mock drafts, I saw an Athletic, they did like a big board up to 100 players, and he was 81, and obviously only 60 would get picked. So, you know, I don't see him landing in the NBA. I see him, you know, getting a good experience coming back, and next year really feels like the year where it could be make or break for him to try and be like a late first round pick, early second round in the Elijah Hughes range.
Yeah, no problem with the decision whatsoever. A smart move, as you said, Ben. I think the primary reason behind him even doing it is just to figure out what those X's and O's are that he needs to work on. Obviously, the NBA draft, just two rounds. So he's hovering around the 80 mark for 60 spots. It would take something, you know, it would take a serious change of narrative there for him to suddenly shoot up 20 spots. But again, nothing wrong with just going to see what the deal is and coming back ready to work and pinpoint those areas next year.
Yeah, go in there, get your info, figure out what you've got to do for next season, and, you know, move on from there. I do not think that there is any negative aspect to this. You know what you need to start doing. You know what you need to work on. So just a lot of good info for Quincy to be able to gain and, you know, take it back to Syracuse and try and build on that with a team that at this point, you know, can bring some guys in. I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves, but there might be a Boeheim trio in the near future. That's where we'll sort of leave you for now. And that's where I will leave you guys as well, as I wrap up there's an asterisk here. Okay. I am taking off my throne, or I'm getting off my throne. I am giving the crown to Ben. I am giving the reins to Ben. Ben Shulman is taking over the podcast next year. I am the senior citizen of the show, and I've only got a handful of weeks left. So I will stay on for some lax coverage, for some late season coverage, but the podcast is officially Ben's. So this is my my last time doing the sign off. So I will try to make sure that I check all of the boxes and hit all of the bubbles here, because I miss one pretty much every single episode. Ben's jumping in quick. We'll give him his chance here.
Before your final sign off, I just want to say it feels like yesterday that me, you, and B-Mort were sitting in the actual station where we used to do this podcast. And we're talking about, you know, Buddy's crazy three over Virginia in overtime, and, you know, should Sidibe play, or, you know, should Guerrier play? He hasn't done much off the bench. It's been a quick year and a half or so.
Yeah. This, despite the world sucking, this was fun to be able to keep doing. And, I mean, we broke 50 episodes. We entered the YouTube sphere. We, have found a fun little following over on Twitter, which is awesome. So I know it will continue to go up, and that's all you can ask for. And you know what? I'm going to be able to linger here and ride your coattails for the last few months of the semester. So if you're with us on YouTube, please subscribe, like the video. If you enjoyed what you see, leave us a comment. We will reply to you. If you ask us a question, we can get you that info that way. Follow us on Twitter at Ostrom Avenue Pod over there. You can DM us. Our DMs are open. Our replies, I mean, reply to one of our tweets or just fire a tweet off at us. We'll get the discussion going over there. Subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. Leave us a review. Leave us a rating. We know it might not seem like the biggest deal, but they do go a long way. And I mean, just have some fun, smile to wrap this up with some positive notes. For Ben Shulman, Johnny Gadamowicz, I am Owen Valentine, not leaving forever, but signing off for the final time.